Hey, hi everybody.
Hi there.
The time is now 1 p.m. on Wednesday, January 15th. I think we're recording already. Here call the Private Activity Bond Committee. It's called to order. So for the record, my name is Jaime Alvarez. I'm the Director of Debt Management here at Oregon State Treasury and the Treasurer's Designee and Chair of the PAB Committee. For roll call, I'd like to call on each of the members of the committee to identify yourselves for the record. Rhonda, we'll start with you.
For the record, I'm Rhonda Nelson, the Department of Administrative Services designee for the Capital Finance Department.
Thank you, Teresa.
And I'm Teresa Diebel, public member of the committee.
Thank you. Okay, everyone should have received the agenda and meetings materials that's posted on the website, and it covers the topics that we're going to talk about today. So we're going to talk about the private activity bond status report, and then we're going to talk about the 24 carry forward request from Oregon Housing. I do want to remind everybody to please mute your mics. Committee members, please feel free to come off mute at your discretion. And for all others, we do ask you to please hold your questions until each of the speakers has fully presented. So as far as a quick summary of 24, I do want to give a really quick recap. Sarah will give a little bit more detail, so I apologize if it's a bit duplicative on the numbers we're going to talk about, but in 24, the PAB committee had approximately $78 million of volume cap authority to allocate, of which the committee allocated $32 million towards an economic development project presented by Oregon Business. And at the conclusion of 24, the committee ended with approximately $135 million in volume cap that was that's now 2024 carried forward. With that, we can go to item number three, and then Sarah will walk us through the bond status update.
All right. So starting with the historical carry forward, the 2021 carry forward expired at the end of last year, and that was split between OHCS, Home Forward, Central Oregon Regional Housing Authority, and Housing Authority of Washington County, and all of it was used before it expired. 2022 carry forward will be expiring at the end of this year. It was awarded entirely to OHCS, and they have used all but 6 cents, and that $0.06 will be expiring at the end of 2025. 2023 carry forward was also awarded entirely to OHCS, and they have already used that in its entirety as well. And then next is the calculation for the 2024 carry forward. So in 2024, the volume cap for Oregon was $529 million, $1 million of which was legislatively allocated to OBDD, and that was in return to the committee in its entirety as part of carry forward. $450 million was legislatively allocated to OHCS. They used $362 million of that. And $87.8 million of that $450 million is returned as part of the 2024 carry forward. And as Jaime mentioned, the committee had then of that $529 million, $78 million to allocate in calendar year 2024, $32 million of which they did allocate and was used, $46 million are returned. So all of that as for a total of $134,971,230 of 2024 carry forward, which OHCS has requested in its entirety for today. For calendar year 2025, the state's total volume cap is $555,408,230. So the committee's authority comes from House Bill 5005. That awarded $58 million. And then there is an additional $45 million, which comes from the IRS dollar amount multiplied by the state population. They update that annually. So the amount for 2025 is that 130 multiplied by the state's the most recent population estimate from the U.S. Census, and that gives us that $555 million, $451 million of which has been legislatively allocated, $450 million to OHCS, $1 million to OBDD, and the remainder goes to the committee, and that's that $104,408,230 for calendar year 2025 that the PVC will have to allocate. There are no allocation requests for 2025 volume cap for today. It is only 2024 carry forward. That is all. On to OHCS.
Thank you. So before we go to OHCS, any questions from the committee? I think the main piece to those numbers is the updated census. I mean, IRS figure with that increased the amount that's allocated towards the committee. And we did the same calculation last year. So it went from 125 up to 130 this year, which accounts for that extra $45.8 million that'll be allocated to the committee for this year. Any questions?
I don't have any questions.
Okay.
Great. I don't either.
Great. Thanks. So next item is a presentation that we will have from Oregon Housing. I see Matthew on, but is it going to be Natasha? Matthew?
Yes, hi, Natasha is here as well. I don't know. Okay. Maybe I'm not showing on screen.
Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Hello, everybody. Nice to be with you all this year. Nice to see a 2025 meeting. As I have been with you all before, and I guess you have the presentation in the packet, so we can do it that way. Appreciate being here for introductions. My name is Natasha Detweiler-Davey. I'm the Director of Affordable Rental Housing here at Oregon Housing and Community Services. And as has been mentioned, we are making the request for the full balance of unused 2024 private activity bonds or the available carry forward for $134,971,230. Wanted to kind of just walk through a few slides here today to kind of show what we have accomplished and where we are going looking forward into this calendar year. So I think we can scroll to the next slide. So in 2024, we successfully financed 22 projects with over 2,200 affordable housing units. 20% of those were located in rural communities, and we have continued to refine and adapt our processes to ensure that we have needed accountability around readiness and moving forward timely. I do think, as was also reflected in the private activity bond resources, we did end up returning some of our 2024 private activity bonds due to project slippage or inability to meet readiness requirements. And so we are continuing to really invest in those requirements and standards to ensure that projects are closing timely when we receive resources or commit resources and private activity bond authority to them. As we look at 2025, you'll see there in the second two sets of bars are what we are looking at for 2025. the $450 million in current year private activity bond resources, and then the available carry forward funds. And then in the green column all the way on the right are the what we have right now for our pipeline. So project commitments upwards of $350 million and are currently working to be able to open a fund offering in the near term to be able to program the as much of the remaining resources as we can with our available gap financing and queue that forward. I think the, and so maybe I will go to the next slide. You know, so in programming that and, you know, to reflect back over the last year, I know I've come regularly to the committee and talked about the updates to our funding process, how we are aligning our work, and that really culminated in the creation of our Oregon Centralized Application, or the ORCA as we call it. And the last part of that implementation is including and implementing tax credits through that ORCA. So our as of the first quarter of this year, we are working to finalize. We finalized a funding framework with Housing Stability Council. I think that was just last week, and are working to finalize the updates to the qualified allocation plan and the ORCA in the next month or so to be able to open that fund resource to allow tax credits to also be deployed. We have held some gap financing to be able to pair with 4% tax credits. And we have a strong pipeline and wait list of projects that we know are seeking to apply and use those resources. So part of our overall update to the ORCA includes looking at ensuring that we are doing all of the updates needed. We're looking at conduit charges to ensure that we're aligned with the market. And we are working on, again, that integration of the tax credits into it. And if we, you know, harken back to, I think this is now a couple of years ago, where we had navigated with Private Activity Bond Committee and the Housing Authorities of Oregon, the need for OHCS to serve as really a funnel point for public investments of private activity bonds into housing. Previously, the housing authorities were all also coming to a committee to seek resources, and we have made updates so that we are able to have those housing authorities come to OHCS and then have a collective voice here to speak for affordable rental housing to the Private Activity Bond Committee. And so part of our memorialized effort around that is moving that commitment with the housing authorities to work in collaboration into our qualified allocation plan, which is that IRS required planning document that is used for that. And so there's nuance to all of it, but effectively we have navigated with the housing authorities to ensure that they have the ability to plan for and access private activity bond authority for housing or authority owned projects where they're not seeking other resources, but are wanting to ensure that they can really have the ability to lead and drive their work locally. And so the cadence of that is effectively an annual process where we are working on pipelines with the housing authorities, getting information around their resource needs, really so that we can hold those resources aside for them and ensure that we are fully subscribing all remaining resources in a way that will let the production kind of continue forward in a more planful way. And so I'm really excited to be at the place where we're incorporating that not into different conversations and thoughts, but really putting those words to pen in the qualified allocation plan to have really clear signal and understanding with housing authorities, no matter who is in any of our seats, that is a collaborative agreement that we are really driving forward intentionally. And I think, you know, the first line here in the summary, just acknowledging just an affirmation or reflection, in the case of investing private activity bonds into affordable rental housing, we are able to generate the 4% tax credit, which then brings all of the private tax credit equity into the state. And I think we can go to the next slide. I've referenced already, you know, the ORCA and our strong, you know, interest and demand for these resources. We have, you know, a huge opportunity within our pipeline where resources are available to deploy into community. We see in the last 6 months gotten requests for upwards of $1.7 billion in resources. We are actively continuing to expand our conversations and kind of discussions with development teams and others to think about other ways that we can really enhance financial structures to ensure that we can meet the moment. Not all projects will be the best fit for private activity bonds alone, where we can use resources like 501c3 bonds and gap financing to blend those together. We want to make sure that we are using really leveraging and using the opportunity to fund larger projects and deeper projects with deeper affordability using our 9% low-income housing tax credit program. Unlike the 4% tax credit, a 9% credit doesn't require the private activity bond leverage, but we have made the decision to be able to put a little bit more of the gap financing to pair with 9% to potentially take a little bit of pressure off of the 4% pipeline, but also to ensure that those projects will all be successful through development, given the persistent market volatility. There is on the single family side in bond issuances, there are additional strategies, and I know Matthew Harris is online in case there are questions specific to this, but in terms of our taxable mortgage revenue bonds, to be able to use the zeros to invest in leverage, further leverage our available zeros to lessen that real pressure on private activity bonds in the launch of those programs. And certainly we know that the interesting and active market shifts in time are not only behind us. We do know that there are active uncertainties in the market, new federal administration coming, and we have navigated some of those challenges as different federal policies are implemented, where we see impacts locally pretty quickly in our development pipeline. So we're attuned to all of those national, local conversations around that, ensuring that we are forecasting and understanding what is likely to come down to us next so that we're problem solving as we go. I'm also really thankful at this point that we are in a place of having the Oregon centralized application launched, because that provides much broader opportunity to really work iteratively with development teams as they are approaching the closing table. And a primary distinction is that though we're giving early conditional commitments to projects, our final funding and commitments are all happening a bunch later in that development process. So we are able to finalize all of that within our processes, you know, closer to the closing table and the initiation of construction. And I think, you know, I've emphasized this probably every time that you have seen me. Lots of different drivers for cost change, cost shift, construction costs, interest rates, labor and material costs are all, you know, all still really pretty elevated. There's shifts and flux, and again, we have anticipation of the potential for other consequences as, you know, federal policies end up changing over the next quarter or and beyond. We also continue to really see and engage in our, you know, are working around the operational cost drivers. We have launched our Permanent Supportive Housing Risk Mitigation Fund, which is really also exciting to see that open to permanent supportive housing providers where they're having challenges with needed repairs and maintenance and consequential insurance drivers. But we also know that that remains a challenge across so many business areas, including most certainly in the affordable rental housing space. And so I think that's really the extent of what we've prepared in the PowerPoint, but I'm certainly open and interested in any questions or conversations you might have.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. A lot of good work going on, obviously, at OACS. I do have one question, and this is around the $230 million that you have projected out for 25. Do you have any more detail around And this is, here in the bar chart. Do you have any more detail as to, you know, estimates or targets on the amount of projects or units that you're trying to accomplish with that portion? Or maybe you don't. I mean, what does it really mean when you say it's to be offered?
Yeah, that is a wonderful question. Thank you. So as we have kind of navigated all of our processes, our intent is that we are opening the ORCA to include requests for, private activity bonds and paired gap financing. And we're targeting to open that ability in February after our qualified allocation plan is updated. And what that will mean, and, you know, I think as thinking about the ORCA effectively, we have a queue of projects that have submitted intake applications saying generally they are working on a project, they're working to get it kind of ready to apply, and they are intending to seek 4% tax credits. And so when we open all of those projects that are kind of in that holding pattern to submit full, like their impact assessment first application for tax credits, we'll receive, you know, in our system work centers to be able to begin going through the application materials and providing us the needed documentation to evaluate whether those projects meet standards. And because we have private activity bonds, which are time sensitive, and we want to make sure that we are able to deploy resources and build housing as fast as possible through our processes, what we will be doing is as projects are apply, they are evaluated and they will be determined to meet our standards across a bunch of different areas in terms of policy impact, project design, and others. We will evaluate first just projects that are permit ready to be able to be financed in 2025. And so we will go through and have a first period where we have our paired gap financing. We have held $100 million in LIFT resources. We do have some preservation resources. We have gap resources that would be available to serve veteran populations and permanent supportive housing. And so all of those different paired gap financing to identify and move forward with projects who demonstrate permit readiness and where we have the available resources to ensure that there's a full development budget. And so we will make those commitments, and where we no longer have either the demand for resources, and I think that we are unlikely to not have demand for resources, but where we have, basically have spent out all of the remaining gap resources that we have to pair with it, we will move those projects into a wait list. Those projects will go into the wait list. And as we get additional resources that will allow projects to be funded off the wait list that fits both their timeliness and their population need, we will give those projects reservations. And I think just from a cadence of that development timeline perspective, acknowledge that, you know, giving a project a reservation for private activity bonds and 4%, we generally want to have about 6 months between, you know, from that compressed development timeline. So know that we are wanting to expedite identifying projects to work towards closing in 2025 as soon as possible. And then we will continue to iterate and titrate down as we are hopeful for additional legislative investment coming out of this legislative session, but will yet to be seen whether there we would have ability to actually close finance projects fully in this calendar year. So I think that's the kind of the order of operations, is really getting all of the full applications for 4% applications, whether they're intending to close in 25 or 26, but that we will really focus very narrowly first on the permit ready projects that could close in this calendar year.
Okay, great. Thank you for that detail.
Absolutely.
I don't have any other questions. Any questions from any of the other committee members?
I'm gonna go ahead, Rhonda.
I do not have any questions. I just wanted to say thank you and appreciate the presentation and all the work that's gone into it and all the planning that you've done for the 2025. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll echo the commendation of all the work you've done to coordinate and bring in, you know, comprehensive plans. So I appreciate that. I do have a question around the challenges that you listed on the last slide. And it's something that comes up in my professional life as I'm talking with sponsors of affordable housing projects. I hear a lot about the challenges on the operating cost drivers, that particularly for projects that have been, you know, closed many years, those pro formas really had some built-in assumptions which are no longer viable for the operators now. And I know that this committee is focusing on new production because, you know, we need to make this decision on private activity bond allocation. But I would like to know more about how you're approaching this and whether it would help me to understand whether decisions now are going to continue to create problems for operators in the future. And I think what I heard was that there's the risk mitigation fund that's being launched. And so that's great to hear. Are there any other changes to performas and how you sort of look at these operators that will minimize some of these challenges down the road?
Absolutely. I think, I think to emphasize your point, the impacts of the current market and this really shift in costs has been, is a challenge across the broad swath of portfolio as project owners and operators are trying to ensure that they remain, they have a healthy DCR, and we see, and I know our my asset management staff are continually engaging with project teams around this as we consider different strategies for intervention. For our own portfolio, we are, you know, continuing to dig in. We have resources set in the portfolio stabilization fund, which we're working to try to identify how, or where we have it open and accessible, but with the idea that we're trying to ensure that we have some tools to step into remedy where a debt needs to be recasted or there's an emergency issue, put forward legislative requests. The governor's recommended budget does include resources to support preservation and including kind of looking at that from that stabilization perspective as well. And looking forward in our, you know, in our production pipeline, I think certainly we have seen quite a bit that is new and different in our overall project performance, as we have seen some of the projects that have been stuck in this middle place of, you know, started construction as things were not looking like they are now, and then finding that they aren't getting the tenant rent payments and others that really allow for the easy even conversion from construction debt to permanent debt. And so we're working and ensuring, you know, support and eyes open around that. And as we are moving forward in our production pipeline, really wanting to, well, I think for one, we definitely see that banks are less tolerant of taking risks in that space. So they are being more conservative in terms of the scale of permanent debt that projects would be viable. And so I think that's that upfront piece. And then we have underwriting guidelines and are also have designed those in a way to really be deferential to other lenders as they step into those projects. And so seeing and understanding that a lot of those should be at the high end, not the low end of ranges. And we are also actively working on an operating cost examination of the operating costs that we actually are seeing in our portfolio, through our asset management function. A large portion of our projects are required to submit audited financials. We have really highlighted the need to have that information this year, and so have the largest portion of the projects that we have received all of those for than we have before, and we are ensuring that we can pull those into a system to be able to understand that. And I'm hopeful that we're continuing to engage in that, understand it, and strategizing ways to get real deep information around operating costs that we see in Oregon. We have access and information from national perspectives and studies that have been done at the national level, but really want to make sure that we're looking at the kind of deeper cut financial reality in Oregon, given all of the operating costs are not necessarily at the high level that the IRS sees or is interested in. And so I think it's a combination of a lot of things and also wanting to, you know, blend the line. We have increased our subsidy limits, knowing that projects will be able to hold less debt and will have higher costs. And certainly as we are, I think, you know, in previous, in a stable market, developers were able to use their assumptions or what they see from a project that they developed 3 years ago and assume that those would be comparable to what you would see today. So whether that's insurance costs or interest rate or staffing costs or other, and we are making sure to emphasize and require that there's something more current than based on your historic knowledge of how these projects operate. So that we're really trying to add greater emphasis on the reality of what it is. I also think another piece of this is developers who have practice owning are experiencing the challenges of insufficient resources in their operations. So I think we are also seeing a corresponding behavior shift to some degree to really have that mindset shift. So I think there's definitely a broad set of challenges and are still trying to find all of the good ways to be responsive to it. I think evaluating where might we be able to find resources to help support, you know, buying down debt or getting lower interest rate on debt. We are also have, sorry, this is going on. One more thing I was going to say, in the governor's recommended budget, the governor has moved forward with one of our agency requests, which was to update the statute around our Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit. And that is a lender credit to be able to get a lower interest rate on your on the debt for your project. And the statute, it requires that any savings from that lower interest rate be passed on to tenants through rent reductions. And our revision is requesting that it could be used for either those rent reductions or for resources to support supportive housing within the project, supportive services within the project. Because one of the other things that we know a lot of owner and operators of affordable rental housing are struggling with is the higher acuity of need that they see in their tenant populations right now, in terms of needing more than just base resident services, but more tenancy supports to ensure that they are successful, can identify where rent assistance comes, all of those types of supports. And so felt like there is an opportunity there to make that revision to give owners a little bit more reason to want to use the credit because they know it will help meet tenant needs in their projects, which also helps the whole project work better. So I don't know if that was what you were interested in hearing about, but I think it is active and ongoing conversation we're really trying to wrap our arms around.
That's really, really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Thank you. That was a lot of great information. One more time, any other questions? Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Natasha. So now we can move this item over to a vote. Is there a motion to award the 2024 carry forward volume cap to Oregon Housing?
I do have a motion, but do we need to do a public comment first?
Oh, right. You're right. Sorry about that. Let's open that up to public comment. Is there anybody that's wanting to speak on this item? Okay. Hearing none. Okay.
Yes. I move that we allocate the 2024 PAB carry forward amount of $134,971,230 to the Oregon Housing and Community Services.
I second the motion.
Thank you. Okay, the motion to approve this request has been moved and seconded. Now we do a vote. Committee members, how do you vote? Rhonda?
Aye.
Teresa? Aye. And myself, Jaime Alvarez, aye. So motion passes. With that, the request of this of 2024 carry forward volume cap in the amount of $134,971,230 has been unanimously approved and passed by the PB committee. So thank you very much to housing and good luck.
Thank you.
That is the last item we have. So unless there's any other comments from the committee members before we adjourn, any comments or questions? No?
No.
Great. So obviously hearing none, the time is now 1:36. I will entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
I move that we adjourn the January 15th, 2025 Private Activity Bond Committee meeting.
Second.
I second the motion to adjourn the meeting.
Great, thank you. Any objections to adjourning the meeting? Hearing none, the January 15th, 2025 Private Activity Bond Committee is now adjourned. Thank you all. Thank you all very much. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.